how important is personal space and body language when you are communicating? What's the difference between alone, by myself, and on my own? All this and more in this week's episode of
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Hello and welcome to our show. I'm Craig.
I'm Reza.
And with over 45 years of teaching between the two of us, we're going to help you vocalize your vocabulary, grow your grammar, and perfect your pronunciation. How are you doing, Reza?
I'm feeling pretty good, Craig. What about you?
Very well, thank you. Feeling fantastic. Reza, do we have any feedback this week?
We do. We can start off with an email from Alberto from Granada. That's the Alberto from Granada who's transcribing some episodes for us. So thank you very much, Alberto.
Thank you, Alberto, and hello.
And he has written, I saw recently a British TV drama called The Fall, starring Gillian Anderson, which is set in Northern Ireland. Don't know if you've seen it, but I totally recommend it. I really loved the Northern Irish accent, you know. Like every sentence is a question and the tone rises at the end.
Every sentence is a question?
I found it very funny. Could you please ask Reza to do some Northern Irish accent for me, please? I would really enjoy it. Alberto.
Can you read that again in your best Northern Irish accent?
Go right from the start?
Yeah.
I saw recently a British TV drama called The Fall, starring Gillian Anderson, which is set in Northern Ireland. Don't know if you've seen it, but I totally recommend it. I really love the Northern Irish accent. You know, like every sentence is a question and the tone rises at the end. I found it very funny. Could you please ask Reza? Could you please ask Reza to do some Northern Irish accent for me, please? I would really enjoy it, Alberto. That was one of my best.
I really, really like that. I think you should speak like that all the time.
Yeah, but if I did, I might have people copy me, and they might be considered crazy out there by other native English
speakers. That sounds it's really musical. Like every sentence is a question. And the tone rises at the end. At the end. It's
well,
really nice.
Well done, Alberto. You recognize that. You spotted it.
Yep. I do recommend that TV series. If you do like watching TV series and you want to improve your listening in English, try The Fall. It's very, very good. You can see where Reza comes from because it is based in Belfast. And it's a crime kind of murder detective series that's very, very addictive. So definitely recommend that.
And Alberto, you're lucky I did my Northern Irish accent. And no te echo mi acento de Granada. Qué malísimo. De Granada.
Next, we have a voice message from Jesus from Valencia about subtitles when watching films and TV series. Jesus is another alcoholic. So let's listen to his message.
Hello, Craig. Hello, Reza. I'm Jesus. I'm from here, from Valencia. I was studying English almost my whole life, but I've taken it seriously since 1.5 years. I discovered your podcast when I searched some interesting to hear when I work out in the gym, and I become addicted. In fact, I don't work out anymore, but I begun now to listen your podcast from the first episode. I'm studying English with an academy online, like iTalki, and I watch a bunch of movies and TV series in English with subtitles. And here's my problem. I'm very dependent about the subtitles when I watch something. I can't understand a movie without subtitles. What can I do? It's better to quit the subtitles even when I understand nothing. Please help. Thank you for your great effort. Your podcast is awesome. See you. Bye.
Thank you very much, Jesus, for your message. We are pleased that you are addicted to the podcast. Another alcoholic. Just one thing, you did say at the beginning of your message, I was studying English since, and you shouldn't use past simple when you use since. Use present perfect in this case, present perfect continuous. So a better way to say it would be, I've been studying English my whole life, or I've been taking it seriously since 1999, for example. Or I've been taking it seriously, I've been studying English for the last year and a half. Did you hear anything else that Jesus could improve, Reza?
Yes, it was not quite clear whether you made a mistake or not, Jesus. It may be the quality of your recording, but I think you said that you said, I become an addict, when it should be, I became. The A sound is the past simple. And I think you said also, I begun, when you should have said, I've begun. That's present perfect. So you're mixing a little bit your past simple and your present perfect of to become, became, become, and begin, began, begun.
On the subject of pronunciation, your ED ending when you said the word searched, it's searched and not searched. The only time you pronounce the ED as id at the end of verbs in the past, regular verbs in the past, is when the verb finishes with a T sound, T, or a D sound, D. For example, the verb start finishes with T, so started. The verb to land finishes with D, so landed. Fart, tira un pedo, farted.
Con perdón.
For example, Reza farted, for example. Paint.
Craig, can you edit it out, please?
Yeah, don't worry that. This will not be in the podcast.
You're very lucky, listeners, that the podcast don't smell. You're lucky there's no smell attached to podcast. It's only audio.
Then there's paint, painted, need, needed, decide, decided, and wait, waited. So try to remember that when the verb finishes with T and D, that's the only time you say id.
I think a nice thing Jesus said was he watches a bunch of movies.
Yeah, a bunch, B-U-N-C-H. How would you say that in Spanish?
Something like un montón. Mm-hmm. Un montón de películas. So a bunch of something is very common in colloquial American English to say a lot of, un montón.
Yeah, I'm going out with a bunch of friends, for example. Because you could use bunch with flowers, couldn't you? Rama de flores is a bunch of flowers. Bunch of grapes.
Craig, I think there was one more little mistake we could mention about a preposition.
Yes, with dependent. I think Jesus said dependent about. It's better to say dependent on. So it's dependent on the weather, for example, or dependent on the pronunciation.
And that's kind of an ironic mistake, Jesus, because that's a mistake of a dependent preposition, funnily enough.
It's also a common mistake with it depends. So, well, it depends on the money, it depends on the cost, it depends on the time, it depends on. So Jesus's question was about subtitles when watching films and TV series. And I remember we have spoken about this and you gave some useful advice when it comes to watching TV series and films. What was it you said?
Here's my advice. If you've got time, Jesus, it does take a little bit of time, but it's worth it. Watch the film without subtitles. Yeah? So you're listening without subtitles. It's going to be difficult, but you'll get a lot of it. Then watch it again a second time with subtitles in English. Then you'll get nearly all of it. And then watch it a third time again without subtitles. And by then you should get 99% of it. I know it takes a long time, but that's a really good way to improve your listening, I think.
And what about just watching it in Spanish, like dubbed? Doblado, dubbed. So watch it dubbed and then watch it in English with no subtitles, because then you know the story.
True.
You know what's happening.
That saves time that way. That's enough. If you haven't got enough time to do it the three times, then that way is much quicker. It's true.
So, yeah. But with Reza's method, you're getting more exposure to English. Your ears are getting more English going in But again, it depends on time, I suppose.
Although My Way probably takes away quite a lot of the enjoyment of the film. Like when you find out who the killer is at the end of the film for the third time, you're probably not very impressed anymore. It's lost its excitement, perhaps.
Or you could watch nearly all of it and 10 minutes before the end, just before they tell you who the murderer is, then you stop and go back to the beginning and watch it without subtitles. Next, we have a voice message from Mamin from Biescas.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Reza. This is Mamin from Biescas here in Spain at the Pyrenees. I've been listening to your podcast about the one about how to learn new vocabulary and the farm vocabulary. And I want to share with you one app that I use a lot, and the people from Get Spoken use it also, and it's called Quizlet. It's a good app, and I think that it's with the use of flashcard also, and I think it's a good resource to know, so maybe your listeners could use it. And on the other hand, I wonder if you could help me with one issue that I have with the use of two expressions, by myself or on my own. If you could help me, I'll appreciate. As always, thank you very much for your amazing podcast. And a big kiss and a big hug. Bye.
Thank you, Mamin. Always great to hear from you. Any comments, Reza?
Yes, Mamin. We still haven't tried your cheese, but we'll be trying it very soon. I'm really looking forward to it. Good to hear from you. On my own and by myself. Well, you got it right. You got it right. When you do things without any help, you do them on your own. I painted the flat on my own, or I fixed my bike on my own. But by myself sounds a little bit different, Craig, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, by myself sometimes can describe a situation rather than when you actually do something. For example, I'm sitting by myself, or I did it on my own. So I painted my house on my own. So on my own, I think, is more used for activities, and by myself is more a situation. But you can also interchange them, and the meaning is very, very similar. There are three, actually, that I like to group together: on my own, by myself, and alone. There's another word, lonely, which is a bit different because it's usually negative. If you're lonely, that's a negative feeling, that's a negative sensation. But the other three, by myself, alone, on my own, are neutral. They could be positive, they could be negative. It just means solo.
Craig, when was the last time you were alone?
Before you came here.
Mm-hmm. Craig was waiting for me to arrive, and there was no one with him. He was alone. But did you feel lonely?
No, I didn't feel lonely because I was listening to a podcast. Okay. So one thing that my students sometimes do wrongly is mix the prepositions. So they might say on myself or by my own. So just be careful with the prepositions on my own and by myself. Just one quick comment on Mamin's message. She said, I'd appreciate. Remember the object, I'd appreciate it. Okay. I'd appreciate your help, for example. I'd appreciate your answer. So there must be something that you appreciate. Remember the object. I'd appreciate it. And the application that Mamin recommended is very, very good. Quizlet. That's Quizlet.com. Go to quizlet.com/ES. It's a free app and it's very useful for learning vocabulary. And there are two other apps that we will recommend with that. One is Memrise, memrise.com, also very good for vocabulary. And Duolingo, also free, at duolingo.com. Those three links are in the show notes at inglespodcast.com/161. And thanks, Mamin, for your recommendation.
Craig, Craig and I have our own recommendation for you. It's Italki. That's Italki. Italki. What is Italki? Well, it's a one-to-one service for you to learn English or any language you want, in fact, with a native speaker. It's very convenient because you don't have to go anywhere. All you need is an internet connection and Skype, and therefore you can have a video class on Skype with your teacher. Obviously, that's very convenient. It's also very affordable. It doesn't cost much. And in fact, you can even choose how much to pay because different teachers charge different amounts of money depending on their availability and their experience and their qualifications and what language they teach. You can do English, French, German, or anything, in fact. What's more, if you sign up to Italki via englishpodcast.com/Italki, Italki, Italki, then Italki will give you $10 in credits to get you started to buy your first lesson. So you can start for free with your one-to-one native speaker and see what you think. We think you'll enjoy it and find it a very useful service. And we'd like to thank Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Thanks, Italki. Our final piece of feedback this week is from Miguel, or Michael, who has contacted us before. Now, Michael doesn't have a dog, but he does have a baby and he does have a cat.
I hope, Michael, do you have a partner?
Well, that's probably...
You could be a very busy man if you don't.
Yeah, let's hear what Michael has to say.
Hi, Gray and Reza, I'm Michael. It's impossible to talk about the concept of personal space in different cultures. Many people in Spain think that the English people are very close-mouthed or secretive. By the way, I do not have any dog in my house. It's enough to have a baby and a cat for me.
Thank you, Michael, for your message.
Thanks very much, Michael. I bet you've got your hands full, quite literally, with a baby and a cat. To have your hands full is to be very busy.
And we did like your idea for this podcast on personal space. Did you catch what Michael said, Reza? I think he said something that, like, English people are very closed-moved or separative. Is that what he said?
I think that's what he said, but that is not the right way of saying what you want to say, I think. I think you want to say close-moved, standoffish.
Standoffish.
A person who stands away, who stands off, they don't get too close. They're standoffish.
Like distant,
or,
you mean?
Distant or aloof is a nice word. A-L-O-O-F. Someone who just doesn't get very involved. They're remote.
Aloof is kind of picho, isn't it? It's kind of a bit snobbish, a bit superior.
Yes, we quite often say someone's aloof because they don't want to get their hands dirty. The expression to not want to get your hands dirty means you don't want to lower yourself, bajarse, you know, to a lower level. It's you're above it. You're aloof. You're too good for that. Other similar words are detached or impersonal. Withdrawn is a good word. If you're withdrawn, you withdraw, you go away from things so you don't get into the middle of the situation.
If you take drugs and you stop taking them, then you get something called withdrawal symptoms because you go inside yourself and you suffer quite badly with withdrawal symptoms. So it's the same similar word. To be withdrawn, the adjective, he's withdrawn, means to be inside yourself. You can also say reserved, uncommunicative, unforthcoming. All these words are in the show notes at englishpodcast.com/161. So unforthcoming, remote, unapproachable. If you can't approach somebody easily and communicate with them, you can say that they are unapproachable. Can you think of any more similar synonyms or adjectives that mean a similar thing?
Unfriendly, you don't want to be a friend. Unsociable, cool, Now, you all know the word cool. Mola. Like something, hey, mola is cool, es muy cool, tío. But that's not the meaning of cool here. We say, oh, John's a bit cool. He's a bit standoffish. He never gets excited about anything.
He's not a warm person.
No, you don't expect him to be over-enthusiastic about anything. He's a bit cool. He's a bit chilly. To chill something is to make it cool. He's cold, cool, he's chilly.
An unusual adjective to describe a person like this could be haughty. H-A-U-G-H-T-Y. Be careful of the pronunciation. Haughty. A haughty person. Or disdainful, another useful one. Uninvolved or unresponsive. Indifferent. An indifferent person isn't very concerned about other people. Standoffish. An indifferent person is very distant and standoffish, very unconcerned or introverted. So all these adjectives speak about people who tend to guard their personal space and are very insular and very isolated people. Would you describe British people like this way?
I would describe some British people that way, but not all British people. But I would also describe some Spanish people like that. And I'm sure there are Argentinians, Ecuadorians, French and German people like that. So you can't generalize everybody. Having said that, here comes the but. Having said that,
however,
there probably are, in my opinion, more British people like that than Spanish people.
I agree.
I would say.
I agree. I can remember, and it's also very cultural, when I first came to Spain, my first month working here in Valencia in the British Council, a student came up to me in the break, and it was the second lesson I'd had with this class, and he came up to me as I was drinking my coffee, and he put his arm around my shoulders and says, "I'm very sorry, Craig, I haven't done the homework." And I felt very, very uncomfortable because this person who I didn't know really invaded my personal space, touched me, put his arm around my shoulder and started speaking to me. And I froze. I really didn't know how to react. After living in Spain for a few years, I realized that that's a very friendly gesture, but it did make me feel very uncomfortable.
So there's a lot more contact, body contact,
yeah,
body gesture in Spain.
And not, you don't necessarily have to know people a long time to touch them in the Spanish culture. But in British culture, it's not really acceptable to put your arm around someone that you don't have a very close relationship with.
Have you ever been touched? I mean, in an innocent way. Don't think badly. You know, qué mentes más malas tienes. No, I mean, in an innocent way, by a complete stranger in Spain. I have. I remember. I think it was in Andalusia somewhere. I can't remember exactly where, but a couple of times, accidentally bumping into people.
What does that mean?
Chocar. Mm-hmm. So bump. B U M P. I bumped into people. The streets were very busy, and twice. The person said, "Oh, sorry," in Spanish, you know, "Perdona, lo siento," something like that, and touched my shoulder and said, "Very sorry." But in Britain, that's not common. If you bump into somebody, you don't later touch their shoulder and say sorry. Mm. But they just genuinely.
Did you feel strange? Do you remember how you felt?
I didn't feel strange, but I just thought, "Oh, that's unusual." But it didn't bother me. No me molestó. But I just felt, "Oh, that's never happened to me before." But it didn't bother me. How would you feel if someone did that to you, complete stranger?
It used to bother me when I first came here, but now I quite like it. I quite like the fact that you can be speaking to a person in the street, a complete stranger waiting for the bus, and they might touch your arm as they're speaking to you. I don't feel uncomfortable, but I did in the beginning when I first came here, and I think that's one thing that Michael is suggesting, that there is a difference, cultural difference, between how people relate to each other in the UK and how they relate to each other in Spain and Latin American countries too. Mm. Argentina, Chile, Central and South American countries have a very different idea of personal space also.
So you would say then that on the whole, British people guard their personal space more.
Definitely.
Than Spanish.
Yeah.
But we're not the most extreme. The British are not the most extreme. The Japanese keep a lot of personal space between each other, don't they? They do not like to get too close. The only exception is the metro in Japan, where
because
they're
no
packed
choice.
In like sardines.
Yeah. There's no choice.
Apart from that.
And there's very little eye contact. Even though they're standing very close and touching each other in the metro, they're not looking at each other because they do feel very uncomfortable. In most Asian countries, that's true. And also in Northern Europe and Scandinavia, there's much more of a distance between people in public, especially when they're not close. Would you kiss a woman if you're introduced to her for the first time in the UK?
No, not usually. No. But in Spain, usually, yes.
Did that take you some time to get used to?
Not really, because to be honest, I just kind of like the idea of
from the first time
getting to kiss a woman, you know, because I didn't have much experience and it was, you know, a chance to practice a bit.
It took me months. It took me a long time to get used to kissing a woman on the cheek when I was introduced to her. It took me a long time.
It took me a while to get to do it the proper way. I did it very badly at the beginning. I think I stupidly all really kissed them, and you're not really supposed to.
Not on the lips, no.
Not on the lips, no, but I think I got my lips kind of on their face, but you're not really supposed to do that.
No, you touch cheeks,
yeah, you kind of avoid lip contact, but I was not very good at it, and I sometimes made lip-to-cheek contact.
You didn't turn your face so that she kissed you on the lips. Another example of differences in personal space is when people go into a cafe or a pub or a bar and it's quite busy, it's crowded, and there are no free tables. Now, in the UK, in a pub, in a cafe, you would possibly go to the table and say, "Excuse me, would you mind if I join you? Would you mind if I sit here?" Mm-hmm. Would you do that here in Spain?
I don't really like to do that anywhere, neither in Spain nor in the UK. If I was really, really tired, I might, just because I needed to relax, but I usually wouldn't. What about you?
I think that's something that's more acceptable in the UK than it is here.
Yep.
I think it's people look very suspiciously at you. Está mal visto in here when you go to ask to sit down with them. People like to sit in their groups. They like to sit with people they know. So it's kind of like the opposite. It's that particular cultural situation is more open, yep, I think, in the UK than it is here, especially in pubs. It's quite common in pubs to share a table, to sit with people you don't know, maybe start a conversation because it's a social situation.
Yeah. As long as you avoid body contact, just sit beside them, yeah.
How important is body language when you're communicating? I said before that sometimes in Spain people touch you when they're speaking. I think that's quite a useful technique to create closeness, to create a bond and communicate more effectively. If you're speaking to somebody and you touch them on the arm just gently, that helps to communicate more effectively. Do you use any of these techniques consciously? Are you aware that you do anything like that?
I think I used to be more conscious of it because I made an effort to try and be like some Spanish people I knew. But now it comes to me quite naturally. But it took a while. I needed time for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, the same. The same. Actually, since I've lived here, I do tend to hug men more than I used to when I was in the UK. At the most, I used to shake hands, even with very, very close friends. And my friend Graham, I've known him since we were 7 years old. I've known him for many, many years. And we always used to just shake hands when we meet. Now with close friends, I hug them and I like it. And I hug my dad when I see him, my brother-in-law. And I like that physical contact. And that's something I've learned from living here in Spain.
Craig, how important is a handshake? You say sometimes you hug people, other people you shake hands. Is it important to shake hands?
It's important how you shake hands, especially in business, when you're meeting someone for the first time. I think a handshake can say a lot about a person. If you are very dominant, if you like to enforce your will on someone and show them you are boss, it's very common to have a very strong, dominant handshake, to grip, to hold the person's hand very tightly, and maybe also to hold their arm with your left hand, mm-hmm. also to show dominance. That's very, very common. There's an expression in English, to get the upper hand. What does that mean?
I guess it comes from when you shake hands, if you have the upper hand at the top, it tends to be the more dominant one. So if you get the upper hand, you're controlling somebody somehow.
Exactly. You've got one up on them. You're in control of them. And that also, when you're shaking hands, you really should shake with your hand exactly at 90 degrees in the middle. You shouldn't turn your hand so that it's on top of the person you're saying hello to. So just keep it normal and return the same grip, the same strength of grip that you're getting. Mm-hmm. So if the person shakes very softly, then you do the same. Or if the person shakes more firmly, more strongly, then you do the same. And when they let go, you let go.
I wonder if many of our listeners and you, Craig, saw the recent handshake between President Trump and President Macron of France. Did you see it?
I didn't. Tell me.
It's been on the news. A lot of people have been talking about it. It may have been their first handshake, certainly their first famous handshake. And they gripped, agarrar, grip, G-R-I-P. They gripped each other's hands extremely firmly. And the French President Macron actually wrote a tweet about it and said it was no accident.
No.
According to him, Trump grabbed his hand extremely firmly. So he paid him back with another firm shake. And the camera got close up to, they did a close up, a zoom on the hand. And you can actually see the knuckles going white. I'm not exaggerating. It was a white knuckle handshake, we call that in English. When your knuckles, that's the kind of the articulation, the joint on your fingers, it went white for both of them because they gripped so firmly.
Yeah, there's a lot of non-verbal communication and body language, especially when dignitaries and prime ministers and presidents meet. And I'll put a couple of links in the show notes over at inglespodcast.com/161. One I like very much by Alan Pease. It's a TED talk in which he explains a lot about how to shake someone's hand when you first meet them. And there's a documentary I like very much on body language on YouTube. So I'll put that also in the show notes. And that speaks about exactly what you've mentioned. When people meet each other on camera, how do they position themselves? How do they walk? And they compare George Bush with Vladimir Putin as they're walking and they're showing their power. It's a very, very interesting documentary. And it's very useful if you give presentations, if you meet people, if you're in business. I think it's definitely something you should watch.
Craig, be careful with your answer. We don't want to offend our listeners, but as a man, what do you do with women?
What do I do with women?
Yeah. I'm talking about handshakes, just to clarify.
Oh, with handshakes. Well, in Spain, I shake their hand and I kiss them on the cheek twice.
And in the UK?
And in the UK, shake their hand.
Always?
No.
This is my point. What do you do with women?
It depends on the situation.
Yeah.
If I were at a conference, perhaps, or if it was a business thing, then I would shake their hand. If it was a more informal situation, maybe I was introduced to someone in a pub or at a party, I would just nod and say hello and smile.
Yeah, you see, it's really difficult as a man to know what to do with women. In the UK, we don't quite know what to do with them.
That's the story of my life, mate. What other cultural differences can you think of between the Spanish and the English? Notice I use the Spanish and the English, because they are nationalities, they're cultural groups. So the Spanish and the English. Can you think of any other differences?
The most obvious thing, day to day, on a daily basis, is meal times when you eat and business hours when you work. So Spain stays open a bit later. In Spain, you have your lunch later, you have your evening meal, your dinner later, and you work till later than the UK.
Because of my favourite time of day, the siesta in the middle of the day. My 20-minute siesta is the best thing about living, one of the best things about living here.
Do you like the later meal times in Spain, 2 or 3 o'clock, compared to 12:30 in the UK?
I don't mind that, but I don't like eating late of an evening. I tend to eat at 8:30, 9 p.m. I don't like that very much. I don't like eating and going to bed an hour or 2 hours after. In the UK, I used to eat about 6, 7. But I do like the big lunch in the middle of the day and then my siesta. What about drinking habits? Because I don't think British people drink in the same way that the Spanish do.
I think from what I've seen, both nationalities drink quite frequently, but the British often drink in excess more frequently. I think the Spanish drink a lot, but they're a bit better at controlling it.
I agree, but I think that the British tend to drink in excess at weekends mainly, namely Friday night, Saturday night. They drink a hell of an amount of alcohol in one session, in one evening. I think the Spanish spread it over the week and over the day, over the evening a bit more, with food in the middle.
Yeah, I to be honest, I find the Spanish way much healthier, much more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Christmas and New Year, we can see cultural differences where the main meal is Christmas lunch in the UK.
And on the 25th.
On the 25th, whereas in Spain it tends to be the 24th, Christmas Eve, that they have a big family meal.
Yeah. And New Year is probably quite similar in both countries, no? New Year's Eve, the 31st of December, is a night to go out with your friends and party, that type of thing.
Yeah, it's probably pretty similar. And then politeness and directness. I think the British like to think they're more polite. Would you say they are?
They certainly like to think they are. And on the surface, it looks like they are.
The language certainly seems more polite with expressions like, would you mind if I, could I possibly, I wonder if I could.
Yeah.
Lots of pleases and thank yous.
That's for sure. I don't think anybody could deny that the language is generally more polite in the UK, particularly with people who don't know each other so well. But even with people who know each other, but particularly strangers. But is it just a superficial thing? That's it. Maybe underneath the surface, you don't really mean it when you say please and thank you, but you're supposed to say it in English. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And I certainly think the Spanish are more direct. They say what they think a lot more than the British. Of course, I'm generalizing, but I think that's true. Would you agree with that? Do you prefer the Spanish approach of being more direct?
Yes, yes. Although I'll tell you one thing that I believe is true. In particularly written language, but it can happen in spoken language as well. Whenever somebody wants to be formal in Spanish, they can be incredibly formal, much more formal than they would be even in English. I think the Spanish go from, you know, being generally very informal to being, you know, kind of neutral, and then jumping to the extreme of extremely formal.
Yep.
I find
very long, complicated, formal sentences, and sometimes it's hard to know exactly what's being said.
Yeah, they overtake the British suddenly at the end.
Another couple of differences I've noticed since living here is when some Spanish people say no, they just do something which we say tutting, which is when they mean no. Like, do you want to have a sandwich now? Just means no.
Yes, in Britain, that's not very highly regarded, is it?
No.
To do that.
It's a negative thing. And so is hissing. Have you ever been out in public and someone wants to get their wife or husband or boyfriend's attention and they'll go, sss, sss, sss.
People have done it to me. Strangers have done it to me.
That's quite rude to me. That's difficult to...
I don't like it.
No, I don't like it.
I've been at like at a bus stop or something like that, and a complete stranger that I've never met before has wanted to ask me a question or something. They've gone, tss, tss, hey, and they've asked me a question. And to be honest, I find it quite rude.
What would we say in Britain? We'd say, excuse me, wouldn't we? Say, excuse me, I'm sorry. And then you'd ask the question. So you'd get their attention by saying, excuse me.
Even this word of oye, if you translate it into English, doesn't sound good. It does not sound good to say to a stranger, listen, it's not good in English. It doesn't really,
oye.
Don't do that. Or even, oiga is a bit better because then that's who said you're being polite, oiga. But it's still not great if for British ears, is it, to hear that?
But I think with intonation, it can be made to sound a bit more polite. Like, excuse me, if with high rising intonation, maybe it's not so strong.
It's much better than being hissed at. I ignore people who hiss at me now. I used to acknowledge them. To acknowledge is to admit that someone's got your attention. Quite but now I ignore them. So people do it right in my face and I pretend I haven't heard because I don't like it.
I don't like it either. One other difference, customer service. Any comments on that?
Fantastic in the Corte Inglés, pretty crap everywhere else.
Well, it's not always that great in Corte Inglés either.
Right.
Sometimes, occasionally, I go into a shop and I'm very impressed by the customer service. Usually, it leaves a lot to be desired, which means there's a lot missing. Could be a lot better.
There are exceptions, though. I find sometimes in restaurants, if they're family-run in Spain...
And what does family run mean?
Run means managed or operated. So if they're managed by the family, so the family who own it work there, they can be really good because, of course, they're concerned about people coming back. It's important to them that you have a good experience and they try and keep you happy. But if it's not family run, it's quite hard to get really good service, I find.
If you have an opinion on personal space, cultural differences, anything that we've been speaking about during this podcast, please get in touch. You can reach us by voice message, which we prefer, on speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. You can also send an email to me, craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, Reza, that's at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And we would like to thank our sponsors who are sponsoring us on patreon.com/inglespodcast. And our wonderful patrons are Nicolai, Anna, Pedro, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Sara, Mamen, Juan, Leiva, Galera, Cory, Maria, Reidemann, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, Agus, Manuel, Nestor, Juan, Carlos, and Manuel Betagon. Thank you very much for your continued support. And thanks too to Arminda from Madrid and Alberto from Granada, who continue to transcribe our podcasts. Alberto has now transcribed 132 and 133, which means that we have full transcriptions for all episodes, numbering 131 to 142. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Alberto.
Reza, what's on next week's episode of Aprender Inglés con Nosotros?
Next week, we'll be looking at some academic terms and vocabulary.
Thank you very much. Until next week, thanks for listening. We love you all. And the music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. It's goodbye from me.
And it's ta-ra from me.
What are we going to speak about this? If you take drugs, if you...
like Craig is now, I'm by the sound of things. Craig, what have you taken?
If you're a drug addict.
It affects your speech. You can't speak properly.
If you...
Roberto, I might test you someday. I might do an entire episode in a really strong Belfast accent and see if you can transcribe it.
See if
but
you like can transcribe
really, really it. Over the top. And I'll use loads of Belfast jargon that you won't be able to understand.
That's not fair.
No, I won't do that, Alberto.
And I'll speak like the Londoner, won't I?
Oh, yeah, be quiet.
Reza, what's on next week's episode, mate?
Oh, you're having a monkeys, mate. Of now out there.
Nah, seriously.
Seriously, I don't know.
Yes, you know.
I really don't. Seriously, I don't.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know. I don't know. What's on next week? That's a good question.
Academic terms, of course.
Oh, you have got it.
Right. So ask me again.
Reza, what's on next week's episode of Aprender Inglés con Us?
Next week we've got academic terms and vocabulary.